365 days a year, no matter how many dishes are washed, we always have not enough Tupperware, and the lids never match the actual box that it should go in. Do you have that problem at home?
You know, I don't, but that's because I was a Tupperware salesman for 5 years.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah, and
I saw your scrapbook you made.
Yeah.
It was a good scrapbook.
I gotta say, the Homemaker's microwave set, Tupperware set.
Is that from 73?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the maroon.
Yep. That's
maroon and cream.
You know, that's really the one set you need. And the lids, they never get messed up. You know exactly which one goes to which container. Yeah.
When I was presenting at the MOPS group I'm part of, that's Mothers of Preschoolers. One of the women were talking about Tupperware, and that's in their top five of Tupperware styles.
That set?
Yeah, there's also
a limited edition.
There's a Leona Hemsley line that happened in the 1987, 86, and that was pretty good. However, if you left it in the fridge too long, the tops would warp or crack. Hmm. Welcome to another edition of Dylan and Dutch Metal Detecting.
Welcome.
This is Dylan. That very masculine sound you hear is Dutch's truck. Can we talk about the truck? We have to talk about this truck right now.
It's a 1993 Ford F-250 XLT. It has the 7.5 liter...
7.5
460 engine. Oh, it's
do I just keep driving, or do you want to?
It's a thing of beauty.
We're driving to Justin's house. It's actually right here, isn't it? No, I don't know.
I always want to turn too early.
Yeah, it's our friend that gave us the idea to do this whole thing. We're going to his house, gonna have a barbecue. He doesn't know we're gonna light some stuff on fire. Whatever, he's cool with it. Please, I'm sorry, I cut you off. We need to talk about your truck.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it, really. I mean...
It's blue.
It's lifted.
It is lifted.
You really feel like you own the road.
I think you do own the road. This kind of car? There we are. Are we good? We're just parking right now. A lot of dead air.
There we go.
Okay. See? See the difference?
Now silence. You can probably hear everything now.
Yeah. I can hear that cricket riding a tumbleweed.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is our prospecting machine, actually. This is what we take on every trip. It's got a 8-foot bed, so we can pretty much load up all of our gear. The big engine allows us to take at least a ton of rock samples home.
The torque alone on this would make most men very jealous.
Yeah. I was at the auto parts store the other day, and
Was Hal working there?
Yeah.
That guy's a character. I love him.
Yeah.
He's always trying to take us fishing.
Remember that one time we did go?
He was so drunk. Buddy, here's the thing. He drinks Coors Light like it's water. And I didn't think you could get drunk on Coors Light. Turns out you can. And he ended up falling out of the boat. But it was pretty shallow, so he was fine. Sorry. You're at the auto parts store?
Oh, yeah. And I'm buying a fuel filter for the truck. And the guy, he's asking me, okay, well, what kind of truck do you have? Ford F-250. Oh, you have the 5.6... liter engine.
Did you punch him straight in the face?
No. Because, you know, I mean, I gotta say, this is kind of my pride here. I love it when people assume that.
Yeah.
So then I can say, oh, no, it's the 7.5 liter engine. And any...
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Did he miturate himself?
He asked if he could go for a ride.
Oh. Was yeah. it? No, this was Hal. Or was this the other guy?
No, it was the Jeremy. Other guy. Yeah.
So you took the Jeremy for a ride?
No.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take him for a ride.
So. I don't blame you. He hasn't earned it.
Yeah, you know.
Anyone that drives a car with their high school tassel on their rearview mirror, you don't get to ride in this. Have you chosen a name for this truck?
I did.
Oh my gosh, what is it?
You know, this is the only car that I've ever named.
Really?
I named her Brienne.
Oh, that's right.
After Brienne of Tarth. Yeah. She's big, she's strong, and gorgeous in her own way.
Yeah.
So there.
So, we're parked, and delving into last episode, we were talking about this jumping viper. It was the den
of jumping vipers.
It was the den. It was a harrowing experience. We're going to walk you through it, because this might save your life. It's pitch black, remember. We're still using echolocation.
Mm-hmm.
So we are constantly screaming our echolocation yell. Is it a yell? I won't call it a yip.
Yeah, it's, a yell, a yelp.
But yelp, it has the connotation of being weak. It's like a mantra, almost, in a way.
Hmm.
And we're constantly screaming it. So we walk into this den. We couldn't count how many jumping vipers there were, but we sure could feel the vibrations.
Yeah, you know, one of the hard things about using echolocation to find jumping vipers, and any snakes for that matter,
every time,
is when they're all writhing together in one giant mass. I mean, even if you could see, you can't really tell how many there are.
No.
Just a mass, a tangle.
I took statistics in college, and I almost majored in it. And what I can tell you is, you could look at a crowd and using statistics and the standard curve, you could come to an agreement on how many items or units are in a certain crowd. When we saw the jumping vipers, I immediately thought of statistics and how many there were. And my brain did a calculation. And safe to say, 1,200 adult-sized jumping viper. I don't count the babies, and I don't count the eggs.
No.
Because they haven't formed the requisite teeth to even pierce skin.
Yeah.
So we're there. Now, there's no running. If you keep thinking, oh, well, why didn't you guys run? You don't run from a den of jumping vipers. That's mistake number one. Everyone makes it, and you're going to end up dead before you even hit the ground.
And if you're Dylan and Dutch, you don't run from anything.
No. Dutch, walk us through what happens next.
You know, most of the time when we encounter poisonous snakes, we never have a problem. There's kind of a mutual respect that happens. But I think they were thrown off by the fact that we were there. They're not used to seeing any mammals of our size, stature.
No.
And so I think they were just a little nervous and thrown off. So when I reached down to move them out of the way, because I didn't want to step on them.
Absolutely not. You're
but we needed to
right.
get by them.
Right. They were in the way.
Yeah. They were impeding our progress. I reached down and I started shuffling them aside. I don't know. We probably got through about halfway through the nest. And one of them jumped, hence the name, and bit me in the shoulder.
Right in the shoulder.
Right in the shoulder. I have to say, I wasn't expecting it.
Neither was I.
No. So immediately, instinct takes over. You know, part of our survival.
Oh my gosh.
Vast background of survival training.
Yeah.
I grab the nearest bat and press it on the wound. Press the bat's mouth on the wound.
Bats are known for sucking. And that bat sucked.
Yeah.
Your shoulder dry of venom. I can only assume.
When I reached up afterwards, I could feel the skin was actually a little bit wrinkled just because it was so, yeah. So.
It's like when you deflate like a balloon.
Some people will say that, oh, you know, not all bats will suck blood. You know, there's vampire bats, there's fruit bats, there's bats that eat insects. But the thing about bats, no matter what kind of bat you are, as soon as you get that taste for blood, you can't stop.
You know, you don't stop.
No.
And you did that bat a favor, because I bet that bat is the leader of its nest. If it has your blood in it, it probably grew a torso. Bench pressing other bats.
I was a little dazed by the venom. The venom was starting to...
Well, any normal person, Dutch, would be dead in 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Roll the window down a little bit, get some air.
So, I was out of commission. It was really up to Dylan now to clear the way for us, and he was going to probably have to, you know, fireman carry me through the den, because,
would have been no problem.
No, not at all. But the snakes are getting agitated.
Yeah, they're wiggling around a lot, they're vibrating, and then all of a sudden, want me to tap
yeah,
in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're kind of, you're just kneeling down,
mm-hmm.
and... To control your blood flow, you were telling me, you went into a, what we call, crisscross position, like in yoga,
mm-hmm.
and you were controlling your heartbeat to slow it down so it didn't move poison anywhere in your system. You could tell your body and your heart where to throw blood.
You know who taught me that?
Who taught you that?
The Dalai Lama.
We're going to talk about him, too.
Yeah.
And he's getting, every year he gets a Christmas card, but... Yeah, we are going to talk... What's this? The guy reversing right here. Did you start the car up? Like this. Oh, we're good. So, you're sitting... the non-PC is Indian style.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the fourth or fifth largest snake comes out of nowhere. And... It looks me dead in the eye, and I turn to you and I say, listen, you're much bigger than I am. If you kill this snake, which I can only assume is the den mother, if you kill this den mother, the other 1,200 snakes are going to pounce on us. But if I kill it, they'll think, okay, the smaller of the two can kill our leader, we're not going to touch him. That's my best guess. The what?
Swap and sell.
So, the other snakes, they scurry off, they slither off to the side, and the den mother coils up and looks like it's about to attack.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had my 16-inch matching machetes I'd been sharpening the entire time. I didn't think it was fair to use those because I'd make short work of her, and I didn't want the snakes thinking I'd disrespect their mother. So I drop them, and I take out my hunting knives.
Mm-hmm. That was really excellent foresight on your part.
What I didn't realize was these jumping vipers can jump. This mother den... This den mother jumping viper can almost fly. She flies in the air without me knowing it, coils her body around my left hand. I had to drop the knife or I was losing circulation. She goes straight for my throat, and I grab her neck with my other hand, and the fight is on. Dutch, what do you remember after that?
You know, one of the things that I was really impressed by was just the strength of that snake. Because, I mean, you know, you're a pretty strong guy. And I think at the time, you'd been doing a lot of lifting, getting ready for that that competition.
Right.
That weightlifting competition. And so, but to see you struggling with this snake, I realized, oh my goodness, this is a really impressive animal.
Technique was very important.
Yeah. And so, you know, I saw you struggling with it, wrestling with it, and you got to the point where you were on your stomach, the yeah. snake, you had the snake, still had the snake's neck, and it was looking at you dead in the eye, and I yelled out, "Over the top!"
That's when I knew. I flexed my arm, my left arm, that was coiled around. I moved my thumb around, and it twisted its coil up. It let go of the coil. And I spun the snake's head around, and I pressed its head against my forehead. Back in 1974, I took a trek up Mount Everest. And I was teaching some Sherpa how to store energy in their fatty cells using whale fat, of course, and penguin, the whole penguin. There they taught me how to do essence transfer. What that means is I can telepathically speak to vipers. I only tried this once before, but I realized jumping viper, they're in the same family. I put its head to my head, and I tell it telepathically, and this is all scientifically recorded, and we could reproduce the results, and I don't know if Johns Hopkins or Northwestern Medical Schools are actually going to do the write-up. They're kind of battling it out in the courts. I don't care. But this is life or death.
They both had us lecture, though, separate times.
Yeah, that was a joke. I hate wearing white coats, but they're like, no, you have to wear them. I was like, well, I'm not a doctor.
I ripped the sleeves off of mine.
That's right. That's right. The dean was not happy. So I'm telling the snake, I am not your enemy. Just let us pass through. A few moments later, the snake relaxes, looks me dead in the eye, slithers off with its countless snake friends.
Yeah.
It was one heck of an experience, and I can only thank the Sherpa for teaching me that.
At that point, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah,
I was gonna say at that point, I was starting to lose consciousness, because some of the venom, you know, it bit me in the shoulder, so it was pretty close to, you know, my brain.
Yeah.
Even though the bat had sucked most of it out. I was still feeling the effects, and it was actually fantastic, because when I was watching the battle between Dylan and the snake, it was almost like a dream. There was colors and lights and all sorts of stuff. It was great. Yeah. I started milking jumping vipers after that. Yeah, just,
it's know, really sweet. Let me try some. It's not my cup of tea.
You know, once in a while, you need to go on a vision quest, and that's it's a really helpful tool.
I don't know a better place to do a vision quest than in a cave using jumping viper's milk.
Where you can't even see.
Right.
Yeah. That's profound. So,
do you really, this isn't going to, I'll put a pause. You really can't go out in the daylight anymore after that bat bit you?
I sunburn a lot easier now. And I usually have this iron taste in my mouth, and it just drives me crazy. I just want more.
Yeah, then you've ordered a lot of rare meat lately, and
yeah, I hardly even cook it anymore.
Yeah,
And I drink the juice that's in the tray.
I mean, it's blood. Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's normal. Going back, you were talking about, what were we saying?
I was losing consciousness. Dylan thought it would be a good idea to haul me back to the surface. He throws me over his shoulder, fireman carry, and starts trekking back. Just to get some fresh air, you know, splash some surface water in my face, and, you know, just let me wake up a little bit.
This is 2 months in.
Yeah, we'd been in the cave about 2 months.
62, 63 days.
So we're hiking back, and, you know, I'm kind of drifting in and out of consciousness, but doing okay.
Yeah.
You know. And I remember Dylan suddenly stopping unexpectedly, because I knew we had a couple miles to go at least.
2 miles, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I knew where I was. We were only 20 miles into the cave.
Yeah. And we suddenly stopped. He says, "Oh." And it wasn't a scared "oh."
No.
It wasn't a nervous, like, "Oh, we're in trouble" kind of "oh." Yeah.
No.
It was more, how would you describe it?
It's like, "Oh, it's raining." Or, "Oh."
Yeah.
I ran over a cat. Or, "Oh, it's my birthday."
Dylan had discovered that while we were down there, there had been a cave-in. And we had actually been trapped in this mine for 2 months before we even realized it.
But, you know, there's a big difference between people that survive and people that don't. When we eventually got out of the cave, and all the news stories and CNN and all the means we took, everyone says that we were trapped in the cave. I'd like to think, and this is why, when people that survive, it's all about their mindset. It was our idea that the cave was trapped inside us.
Hmm. Yep. What you just said reminds me of Band of Brothers. Did you see that show? Know anything about the story?
I love that story, Band of Brothers. Best advice I've ever heard about leadership is when they're talking about Ross from Friends. He wasn't a bad leader because he made the wrong decision. He was a bad leader because he made no decision.
Hmm.
Dutch.
You might have to help me with the details, but the team is under heavy fire. They're kind of stuck in a position for a long time. It's winter, it's cold, it's freezing. Conditions are just terrible. And eventually, battalion comes and...
This is controversial, too.
Yeah, clears the way, and everyone who's not there at the time says, "Oh, they saved you. They you know, cleared the way for you. They took out the enemy." And everyone in that group, they said, "We didn't need to be saved. We never asked to be saved."
That's right.
You know, and I feel like that kind of relates to the cave and us.
Yeah.
We weren't asking to be saved. We didn't need saving.
No.
No, I don't know.
That's not the deal. It reminds me of that time we were trapped inside that tornado.
Mm.
That was after we learned how to stop a tornado, but we didn't want to stop it. So we wanted to see. The tornado was not the aggressor. We were.
Yeah. Yeah.
This has been a good story. The Vipers, the next thing on our list were the underground bear's nest. But we don't, that's probably going to be like part 6 or part 7
mm-hmm.
of this, what we would only call it, the Mine of Dreams.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that mine,
it's really not a mine, it's a cave, but.
Yeah, that's true. But a cave that was mined, yeah. We'll probably keep coming back to this story again and again.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much that happened down there. Some stuff that we won't talk about.
No. And we don't... The thing about who we are is, after we got out of this cave, we didn't need therapy. You'd think that you'd need therapy for claustrophobia or Mm-hmm. Some type of anxiety disorder. No. We got out of the cave and we went back to work. Saw our wives. Now, before we end the podcast, we need to talk about the alcoholic drinks we're trying tonight. Mm-hmm. And...
Tonight, I'm having the Tullamore DEW 12-year-old Special Reserve.
Sounds good. What proof is it?
You know, it's kind of hard to read. Luckily, you know, we'll talk about this later. When we were down in that cave, our eyes adapted so well to the darkness that we can read in virtually pitch black. It's 80 proof.
It's 80 proof, yeah. I'm reading Belvenny, single barrel, sherry cask.
I had that one last night.
15-year-old, single malt, 94 proof.
That one's fantastic.
Is it good? I'm excited.
That was one of my favorite ones.
Going back to, because another thing we talk about before we end the podcast is, what was the most useful item just for the den of jumping vipers? Just for that.
Just for that. You know, I'm going to have to say my utility vest was the most...
really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, my utility vest. It has pockets for everything. It has a holster for my pistol. It really came in handy on that.
When I think snake fighting... Mm-hmm. The first thing that comes to mind is my cuticles and my fingers. And I have a device, I have like just a little tool for manicures. So push your cuticles down or you might get hangnails. Mm-hmm. And that could lead to a really painful infection. So.
And that'll stop your whole mining operation.
Yeah. So that was my favorite, most useful tool. This has been a great podcast.
Oh, man. It really got me thinking. And just... diving back into that story, you know, I think I'm going to go find myself some of that jumping viper venom.
That tastes really good.
Yeah.
But going back to my favorite Tupperware, bigger isn't always better, but I don't like the smaller ones that you can only put like 2 spoonfuls like pudding in, or like fruit, or like 5 grapes. I think the best Tupperware really is something in the middle.
I mean, if you're not... Who eats 5 grapes?
Not even infants.
When I eat grapes, I usually eat 2 bunches at a time.
Right. We usually, someone's feeding them to me. One in a lawn chair with someone fanning it. But I do have to say, there's no substitution for hard work. There's no substitution for Tupperware.